ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। The second chapter entitled as Sankhya Yoga is one of the longer chapters. In fact, second chapter and 18 chapters are big chapters. This has about 72 verses. It's called as Sankhya Yoga. It's a philosophy given by Kapila Muni. Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya is nothing but explaining the truths with reason and logic and coming to a firm, irrefutable, logical conclusion. Discriminating between the real and the unreal. Purusha and spirit, founded on reason and logic and coming to a an irrefutable logical conclusion about the truth. This is Sankhya philosophy. This chapter is called as Sankhya Yoga. After Arjuna physically became incapacitated to act in the first chapter, justifying his stance of not fighting because he thought he was going to kill his guru and grandfather, which was a Gora Karma, etc. He was completely overpowered by his emotions and he sat down. Then Krishna whipped him up in the second chapter, beginning, if you remember, he says, Kutrasthva Kashmalamidam, Vishame Samupastitam, Anarya Jishtam, Ashwagyam, Akirti Karam Arjuna. Whips him up and says, be straightforward. Don't hide behind justification. Don't say that you are not interested in kingdom. Don't say that what pleasure is there in kingdom, etc. This is not you. Come to the point. Then he comes to the point and says, how can I fight with weapons against Bhishma and Drona? They are worthy of worship. So his main problem is what? His guru, his grandfather, and etc., all these people who he has kept them in high pedestal, he has to eliminate them. And this he feels is terrible actions. So he surrendered, you know, he was confused. So he comes to the point. And then he tells, I am caught in a helpless situation. If as a Kshatriya I don't fight this war, I will be committing a sin. And as a Grahastha, I will be committing a sin by leaving this battlefield and begging. So I don't know what to do. What is right in the context? What is my duty? I told you, you will be punished or rewarded by your actions, not for your actions. That is what law of karma says. All of us are punished or rewarded by our actions, not for our actions. For as if somebody else is giving it to us. Life presents itself to us based on how we have acted in life. If you had selfish motives and you function with selfishness, accordingly the effect will be on you. You might not remember what actions you perpetrated earlier. A lot of people say, I never thought anything negative about anybody, still I had to go through all this. You have no idea. Firstly, when you do actions, you do it like a sleepwalker. Someday your focus is and you are doing actions. So you don't know what kind of actions you have done. And when the results come, you say, what have I given to deserve this? But nothing in this world comes to you which you have not sown the seed for. It's like you went to a restaurant and you ordered. But while ordering, you were in engaged in some other discussion, you just like that ordered, and when the food came, you say, I never ordered this. It's exactly like that. When you do any actions, you will have to face the repercussions. That's a law. Whether it's good, bad or ugly. So, he is confused, Arjuna here, if I fight the battle, I'll be committing a sin of killing my guru. And if I don't fight the battle and go to forest and beg, then I'll be committing a sin of a grahastha taking. I told you, taking is allowed for a brahmachari, for a vanaprastha, for a sannyasi. Taking is not allowed for grahastha. Why? Life should be based on duties and not on rights. Life should be punctuated by giving, not by taking. Right? The entire life, if you see, is a circulation. Circulate hona chahiye. Agar if I try to hoard, that is sinful. Instead of giving, if I try to hoard anything, that is sinning. Stagnation is sin. The blood has to circulate. The food we eat should get digested, and the digested portion should get circulated. Undigested things should be thrown out. So this is how the whole thing functions, circulation. But if you try to hoard, just take and not give back, your life will putrefy. Right? So, Arjuna or anybody for that matter, before giving we should be strong enough to give. So a tree also goes on taking to strengthen its roots. Once having strengthened the roots, it starts giving. Are you with me? So when we are saplings in the Brahmacharya Ashrama, you are okay to take. The society provides you. The parents provide you. You keep on taking. But having taken, now having strengthened yourself, it is time for you to give back. Whatever talents, nature you have, you give it back. The attitude of giving it back, you serve in this world. That is grahastha ashrama. So you fulfill your desires legitimately by following the principle of giving, and you rise above the desires. And when you have risen above the desires, slowly you can live with simple things, minimum things, frugal living. The mind is not completely out of the world and totally with divinity, but to a great extent it is out of the world. So you are now capable of living simple living, frugal living. Then you are just requiring very, very minimum. So minimum taking, maximum giving. You don't maximum sacrifice, you don't want, and you may not externally contribute that much actively, but you are not taking that much also. You reduce your taking also tremendously. And when it comes to sannyasi, it's out and out, not taking anything from the society, very, very little. His mind is completely shifted to the divinity. So grahastha is supposed to contribute. And if he goes to forest, Arjuna, he's not going to contribute. He's living on alms, which is a sin. So he says, I don't know what is right in the context. Karpanya dosho upahata subhavaha prichamitvam dharmasam murachetaha yashreyasya nishitam bhruhitanne sishyasteham shadimam tvam prapannam. My nature is so powered by the taint of pity. I am confused as to what is my duty. What is good for me, please tell. With certainty, I want to know what is good for me. I am thy disciple. Sishyasteham shadimam tvam prapannam. He surrenders in verse 7, chapter 2. Arjun. Then Lord Krishna from verse 11 onwards gives the philosophy. When he gives the philosophy, he first gives Sankhya philosophy. Why? Because Sankhya philosophy establishes that discriminates between Purusha and Prakriti, Atma and Anatma. So the problem here, according to Krishna, Krishna has diagnosed Arjuna's problem. He says the real problem Arjuna is having is, he's got education about the world, but he lacks knowledge about himself, about who he is. This is the basic problem that all of us go through also. Every other knowledge, secular knowledge, talks about things around you. It talks about your body. It talks about your mind. It talks about your intellect. It talks about the external objects and beings around you, the world around you. But you remain ignorant about yourself. When you have lost yourself in a desert, somebody took you to the desert and left you there and came back, how will you find directions to come back? You don't have GPRS, you don't have mobile phone, nothing. How do you get back?
Go by your instinct, follow your intuition, like the sun.
Forget about instincts and all that. Sun, you will see where it is rising, there you say, okay, this I know. Then from there, all the other directions you are able to establish. So all other things become clear to you only when you find out who you are. This was the major problem Karna was going through. Karna had everything in his life. Even later on when Duryodhan made him the king of Angadesh, right? He became the king now. But still there was something inside eating him. I don't know who I am. Who is my father? Who is my mother? What is my real, nature? He was like, that problem he had. We are all like Karna. Everything we know except who we essentially are. So when Lakshmi Narayan doesn't know that he is Lakshmi Narayan and imagines himself to be Dr. Manmohan Singh, what would you call him?
Ignorant.
Be as nasty as you can. Be as nasty as you can. Don't be so polished. You would call him insane. Insane. Right? Insanity it is. It is insanity. What is insanity? When you do not know who you are, you are insane.
Sent to the asylum.
Are you with me? So, if you basically see, none of us know who we are essentially. So, it is insanity. So, unless that knowledge is gained, sanity will not be established. So, the essential knowledge Lord Krishna taught was the reason, which he lacks is the reason that he is behaving like this. So, he needs to be given the essential knowledge. So, straight away he starts talking about Atma. And I also told you how we perceive matters in life. If you perceive yourself to be useless, you continue to be useless. You perceive yourself to be great, you continue to be great. Our perception matters. Our evaluation matters. We are all evaluating ourselves from the point of view of the body, mind, intellect. A short fellow has complex when he looks at a tall guy. A dark fellow has complex when he looks at a fair guy. You understand? Things like that. We all have identified only at these sort of things where we have these complexes in us. This is what is happening to Arjuna also. He's identified himself with his body, mind, intellect. This body has come from my parents' body. And my children have come from my body. So my association, the whole thing is at the body level. Maximum little more at the mind level. Seldom at the truth Atma level. So when I have evaluated myself wrongly, as if I am only this body, mind, intellect, then I am finding myself as finite, no? A finite individual is okay to have disturbances. This is what a lot of people say. It is normal to get affected when things go wrong. No. Because you accepted that you are that finite individual. Agree with me? Whereas, Krishna is trying to tell us, you have valued yourself wrongly. I gave you the example, if you remember when we did this, your house is there in a particular location and you wanted to get a loan from that house, giving that as a mortgage from the bank. Right, you want to mortgage it and take loan. And the bank fellows come and assess and they say 5 crores. What nonsense is this? It's worth 50 crores and they say only 5 crores. So he'll say, okay, I'll come back to you, and then you'll call another banker. Somebody who comes closer to 45, 48, you say, okay, correct estimation. So you have estimated yourself from the point of view of the body, mind, intellect. Therefore, this problem that Arjuna has fallen into. So right estimation about himself has to be given to him. Is that clear? Right perception is very important. The world perceives you as an idiot. And you start accepting that, and you also start perceiving yourself as an idiot, then you continue to be an idiot. Britishers said, you are a slave, you are a slave, you are a slave. We are the masters, we are ruling you. Everybody started believing in that. Mahatma Gandhiji came and said, you guys are taking from us, we are giving. We are the masters, you are the takers. You are the slaves, you are not the slaves. Perception mattered. And he was able to instill that perception in the entire Indian nation, people of India. Once the total perception changes, then the Britishers had to leave. Are you with me? Perception matters. Stephen Covey gives a beautiful story in his, I think in his book, First Things First, or one of the books, I don't remember which one. He says, a guy was traveling in a train, and the train was peaceful. In the West, you know, the train is very calm, quiet. Everybody was minding their business, reading a newspaper, etc. Suddenly, in a particular station, a father gets in with his two sons. He quietly goes and sits in one corner, but the children are running up and down in the compartment, making so much of noise and disturbing the whole atmosphere there. So one fellow who was traveling got up and said, hey guy, are they your children? He says, yes. Can't you tell them to keep quiet? We were all traveling peacefully, now they're making so much of noise. Why don't you tell them to keep quiet? For which he replied, it seems, yes, that's what I'm thinking, how to tell them. Because we're just coming from my wife's, their mother's funeral. Immediately the fellow said, let them be. Just let them be. Perception has changed. The situation that was disturbing doesn't disturb anymore. Are you with me? Same situation, perception has changed. So Lord Krishna is trying to give him a deeper perception about life. From the surface, everything looks a problem. This is exactly what happens when you go to a Mahatma and discuss the problem. He temporarily make you see from the depth. Then you say, what was the problem? There was no problem. After some time, then you've lost the association with Master, and you've gone somewhere and you're associating with people who are vibrating at the periphery, again the problem has come. So in other words, from the periphery, problem will continue. You can deceive yourself by moving from one problem to another, thinking that this problem is gone. The real solution is to go from the periphery to the center. Re-evaluating your own true being, who you are. So Lord Krishna talks about the essential nature of every being here. He says, wise people do not grieve for those who have come and those who have gone. Why do they not grieve? They don't grieve because they know the truth about Atma. They know the truth about who you essentially are. Atma means your real nature. Ignorant people do not know the truth about the real nature. Therefore, out of ignorance, they are identifying with the body, mind, intellect. Accordingly, they go through sufferings. So he said, Atma never dies, is never born. Never indeed was I not, nor you, nor the ruler of men. None of us will cease to be hereafter. Never indeed was I not. Who is telling whom? Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna. Never indeed was I not, nor you. But Arjuna is very well aware of Krishna's date of birth and his own date of birth. But yet Krishna is saying, never indeed was I not. So is he talking about anybody from the point of view of the body? From the point of view of the body, you were not there before your date of birth or date of conception. You were not there from the point of view of the body. So when Krishna says, never indeed was I not, never indeed were you not, he is obviously not talking about the body. He is talking about Atma which was there before the body. Atma which will continue to be after the body. So he simply shifted the focus from the periphery to the center. So he says, the real Atma in us never dies. Just as you have passed from childhood to youth to old age, you will pass into another body when you die. There we told the three C's of our personality. To simplify the matter, the three C's are the container, the content and the consciousness. Container is the physical body. Content is the mind and intellect, the subtle body. Then consciousness is the Atma. The bulb is there, electricity is passing through the bulb and the light is emitted. Now the electricity is passing through the bulb but the light is not emitting. Why? Because the tungsten filament has given away. Therefore, even though the electricity is passing, the bulb is still not giving out life, the light. So we say bulb is dead. When we say bulb is dead, the physical glass portion is there, the electricity is still there, but what has happened? The tungsten filament has given away. Similarly, when anybody dies, the container is there, the physical body is there, Atma, consciousness which is all pervading is there. So what is moved? We say the subtle body has moved. So from a relative point of view, the word Atma is used generally to mean subtle body. So a lot of people say Atma has gone from one body to another. But if you mean by Atma consciousness, consciousness has not moved. Only the reflecting medium is not there. In frame A, there was a mirror fixed. In frame B, there is no mirror fixed. The sunlight is reflected in frame A because the mirror is there. But in frame B, it is not reflected. Now I unscrew the mirror from frame A and screw it in frame B. Now you say the mirror is reflecting the sunlight in frame B. So you say sun has moved. Sun has not moved. Sun is everywhere. What is moved? The reflected sun has moved. This is what he is explaining there. So when, what is death then? So we define death as, transference of subtle body from one gross body to another in the medium of pure consciousness. Transference of subtle body from one gross body to another in the medium of pure consciousness. This is what Lord Krishna is explaining. So when the Atma is getting reflected in the body, you will go through various experiences. Pain, pleasure, heat, cold, etc. Heat and cold are the varied experiences that we'll go through. So whatever experiences an individual goes through, when we say individual, consciousness, content and container, the 3C personality. The 3C personality will go through various experiences of heat and cold, pleasure. Heat and cold, sometimes is heat is pleasurable, sometimes heat is painful. Cold is sometimes pleasurable, sometimes painful. So we will be going through these pairs of opposites. As long as you exist in body, mind and intellect, you will go through the pairs of opposites. But you have a choice to identify with them or not identify with them. When your body goes through pain, if you identify with pain, you will go on reinforcing pain and you will become the pain body. But you have a capacity to remain detached so that you slowly pain moves away from you. So that person who has the capacity to be detached when he goes through this phase of opposites, he is capable of gaining the knowledge of Atma, he says. He is qualified for immortality. And then he says, wise people clearly know the truth about what is unreal and what is real. Real never ceases to be, unreal never exists. Real never ceases to be, unreal never exists. Verse number 16 of chapter 2, very important verse. You need to understand it correctly. What he is saying in verse 16, 14, I already explained to you. He says, when you as a 3C personality live in this life, there will be pairs of opposites. But if you identify with consciousness, then you will create a gap between you and the pain, then the pain will slowly move away. But if you don't identify with consciousness and start identifying with the pain, then you will strengthen pain more, you will become pain body and suffer. The choice is yours. So if you want to gain immortality, then you must start identifying with consciousness. Then wise people, he talked about, he said, wise people know the difference between what is real and unreal. The unreal has no existence, the real never ceases to be. The truth about these indeed has to be seen by the seers of truth. The horns of a man, does it exist? The horns of a bull exist. Are you with me? So when you say doesn't exist, unreal doesn't exist, the apparent existence of unreal has to be understood, is this. It is a manifested thing. Unreal means that which is there now but will not exist later on. Did not exist earlier. Reality means that which existed in the past, present and future. Unreal means that which seems to exist now but doesn't exist, did not exist earlier, doesn't exist later on. That is unreal. At the moment it is existing, it is a superimposition. Chair is unreal. Wood is real from a relative point of view. Chain is unreal. Gold is real. Pot is unreal. Clay is real. Is that clear? So the what is in everybody is always is. What is not is never is, never will be, never was. It is only a superficial, superficial thing. So he says, Mithya is dependent on Satya. Satya is independent of Mithya. Wood continues to be even when it has been modified into a chair. Gold continues to be even when it has been modified into a chain. Clay continues to be even when it has been modified into a pot. Pot will perish, chain will perish, but the clay will not perish, gold will not perish, wood will not perish, chair will perish. Are you with me? So in other words, what he is saying is, Atma is independent, Anatma is dependent. So he talks about Atma being something beyond birth, beyond death, which is always there, which is the reality. All the other things are superimpositions on Atma, which are unreal. They're not real. It comes and goes, comes and goes. So you must understand the transient nature of what comes and goes, and always identify with what is permanently is. Then you will not have any problem. Then you will slowly be able to go towards divinity within. So he says, remember, nobody is destructible. Everybody is essentially indestructible. What is destroyable will anyway be destroyed. What is not destroyable can never be destroyed. This is what he is trying to say. Are you with me? The form is destroyable. And whether somebody destroys it or not, it will destroy itself. And it is already destroying itself. You don't remember, you don't understand that. The glass that you see here, as you are seeing, it is decay. It is perishing. Do you know that? The change that is happening, you don't see. But the change is happening. The pebbles that you see today were once upon a time a huge boulder maybe, or a mountain. A constant flow of water and so much of other things, heat and everything, slowly corroding the big, huge mountain into small pebbles. Boulders into small pebbles. But when you see the boulder, you don't see it happening, but it is happening. Similarly, everything is a changing factor. The changing thing is the wave. That wave is dependent on water. Water is not dependent on wave. That water is satya, wave is mithya. So mamta is mithya. Are you with me? Ami is mithya, Meenakshi is mithya, Shweta is mithya, Sadhana is mithya. But the atma in each one of them is satyam. That is indestructible. So Arjuna, you have identified yourself with the body, and you are identifying Bhishma, Drona and everybody with body, therefore you are crying. Get to the real assessment, man. It's like bankers assessing wrongly your property. Wise people have not got any wrong assessments. They always identify with Atma only. Therefore there is no Atma, is indestructible. That is why Lord Krishna said, one who thinks he can destroy, one who thinks one can be destroyed, both are idiots, he says. What is destroyed is only the form. Atma ko kuch nahi kar sakte. Then he said, Atma is the subtlest. Grass cannot affect the subtle. Grass cannot affect the subtle. It is the subtle that controls the grass, not the other way around. Atma passes from one body to another apparently when the body is given up. And this happens till the vasanas, content are there. When the content is exhausted, then there is no more birth and death. So this he explained in 22nd verse. He says that vasamsi jivnani yata vihaya, means your body is only a vesture. The wearer decides, when the vesture is worn out, he gives up the worn out garments and wears a new one. So you in fact choose your death. This is what he is trying to say. In other words, your karmas, your actions determine that this body is no more conducive for the expression of vasanas. Therefore, it gives up this and takes up a new one. Even though nobody directly wishes to die, but the sum total of all our actions, our desires, find out that this body is no more conducive. So they give this up and take up the new body. So the question a lot of people ask, one person only lived 3 years, one person lived 30 years, one person lived 100 years, how is all this? So we say, you wear a set of clothes and go to work for 8 hours, 10 hours. You come back, wear your shorts and t-shirts and go and play tennis. within 1 hour you come back and change it. One you thought it's okay for wearing for 9 hours, one got soiled within 1 hour. You decided. Your karmas decide when to give up this body and take up a new one. And this giving up and taking up continues till the content continues. And when the content has been completely exhausted, then what remains is only consciousness. That is what is we call as moksha, liberation, enlightenment, self-realization, etc. So, he says, this is not born, nor does it die, nor having been, will ever cease to be. This is unborn, eternal, changeless, ancient. It is not killed when the body is killed. It continues. Atma doesn't perish at all. So don't worry, there is actually no loss. The loss is only apparent loss projected by an ignorant fellow. Wise person sees there is no loss. You have transferred sugar from one container to another. It's not lost. So Atma never perishes. And the subtle cannot be controlled by gross. Nainam chindanti shastrani. Weapons do not cleave Atma. Fire doesn't burn Atma. Water doesn't wet Atma. Wind doesn't blow Atma. Atma is the subtlest. Gross cannot control the subtle. Subtle controls the gross. Elephant, which is a huge animal, so powerful animal, a puny little fellow, sitting on top of the elephant, called the Mahout, controls the elephant. He says, go this side, the elephant goes that side. Go this side, the elephant goes this side. Subtle controls the gross. He has the intellect, the elephant doesn't have the intellect. Gross doesn't control the subtle. The gross knowledge will not help you to be the leader of this world. What will give you the ability to be the leader? The subtle knowledge, the knowledge of Atma. This is what Arjuna is indirectly saying. We are being told by Lord Krishna. So subtle controls the gross. You can put a person inside the jail and arrest his physical movement. But can you arrest his thoughts, thought movement? So we say, stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. So you are that subtle person, not this gross thing. And now the problem is, we can misunderstand Atma to be space, because space is the subtlest of elements. Fire cannot burn space, water cannot wet space, wind cannot blow space, weapons cannot cut space. We say room space, hall space, bedroom space, kitchen space. But truly speaking, there is no different space. Space cannot be divided. Space is subtler of all the elements. All elements rest in space. So we can misunderstand Atma to be space. Therefore he says, it is even subtler than space. Space is not there in deep sleep. The concept of space, is it there in deep sleep? The concept of time, is it there in deep sleep? It's not there. But Atma is there in deep sleep. That is why next day you report, I experienced nothing. I did not experience space also. When you are sleeping, when you are in dream, this concept of space and time. When you are in deep sleep, is there a concept of space and time? Nothing. You get up and say, where am I? What does that where mean? What time is it? My God, 12 hours I slept. So in deep sleep, the concept of space, time and causation is not there. Are you with me? But Atma was there. That's why you come and report. Yes, I was there. So Atma is even subtler than space. So Atma is changeless. Atma is birthless, Atma is deathless, Atma is independent, Atma is the subtle, Atma is immovable, Atma is ancient, etc., etc., etc. He spoke about. And you are that. Where is the problem? Okay. Having explained this from this angle, now Krishna dilutes the philosophy a little more and says, even if you think you are the content, then also where is the problem? Supposing from conscious point of view, you explain, consciousness point of view. Then he says, okay, if you think you are the content, is there a problem? No, because content gets transferred from one body to another. No. Where is the problem? Where is the loss? So even if you think you are somebody who dies and born again, where is the problem? Because for everything that is born, there will be death. This is certain. For everything that dies, will have to be reborn again. Because the whole life is a cycle. You see, day becomes noon. Noon becomes evening. Evening, night. Night, day. This cycle continues, no? Day is born, night is dead. Day dies, noon is born. Noon dies, evening born. Evening dies, night born. In the cycle of birth and death, day is maintained. So certain indeed is death for the birth born, and certain indeed birth for the dead. Then also there is a problem. Krishna says, then also there is no problem. And then finally, even if you think from the point of view of a kshatriya, from the point of view of your duty in the context is to fight. And when you fight, you can get killed, or you can kill somebody. But you don't have any intention of killing that person. Do you have any personal motive? No. So a kshatriya who functions in the war, does his duty of fighting, doesn't identify with a larger cause, righteousness, and has no personal motive, where is the problem? In fact, it is an open door to heaven, he says. Heaven means happiness. When you function unselfishly and selflessly, you are in heaven. When you function selfishly, with destructive nature, even in a heavenly atmosphere, you are in hell. So what is heaven for a kshatriya? An unasked opportunity to defend righteousness. Why you are defending righteousness? If you happen to kill somebody, you are not committing a sin. What is sin? Sin is not in the action. It is in the intention that backs the action. I told you, two things should come to your mind when you talk about sin. A terrorist plunging knife in somebody else's body, the action of plunging the knife, and doctor plunging the knife in a patient's body, the action of plunging the knife remains to be the same. But the intention is different. One wants to kill, another wants to give life or make him continue to survive. Action being the same, one is virtue, another is sin. And similarly, another thing I told you, for a child to play with toys is not sinful, but for an adult to play with toys, sinful. Meaning what? You gotta keep moving, keep growing. If you refuse to grow, if you refuse to move, you go on accumulating, but you never grow, you are swelling. It is sinful. You must grow out of your attachments. Arjuna, if you don't fight and you are out of attachment, you stagnate, then you are committing sin. Instead, if you fight, move ahead, you are not committing sin. This is explained by Lord Krishna. And then he says, till now I spoke to you on Sankhya philosophy. Now let me speak to you on Buddhi Yoga. Buddhi Yoga, in the context we said, is Karma Yoga. Why did we say that? Buddhi Yoga means acting with awareness, acting with discrimination, acting with a higher goal. This is Buddhi Yoga. When you act in this world without awareness, that is when you gather vasanas. And to make you understand this, I gave you an example. As I am talking to you, I can play with my mala. Keep on playing with my mala as I am talking to you. Some people have that habit, no? So then what happens? After about 15 minutes, I have made so many knots. So now I want to remove all the knots. Now what do I have to do? Now I have to become extremely focused. Become aware. Focused on those things and slowly, slowly remove the knots. So unconscious actions brings about knots. When you are in anger, are you conscious or unconscious?
Unconscious.
That is why you say something. Get lost, man. Get lost. And then you say, my God, what have I done? So unconsciously we have been acting. So that is why I said there are three categories of people. One who are sleeping. Others are sleepwalking. And there is one very few people who are in that category, and that is awakened walkers. Many of us fall in the category of sleepwalkers. Sleepwalking is karma. Walking with awareness is karma yoga. Buddhi plays a vital role. So he calls it as buddhi yoga, uniting with action, keeping awareness is buddhi yoga. When you do actions without awareness, it is simple karma. And karma binds you, karma yoga releases you. Karma binds you and karma yoga releases you. So he says, Arjuna, don't fight mechanically. A lot of us, when we have got a good reason, now we start taking revenge. No doubt, you are fighting on the righteous side, but let not your past come in your way when you fight now. See, this is a very, very subtle point that we need to understand. Somebody has been doing a lot of injustice to you. You never retaliated. You waited, waited, waited. And he made a mistake. And you happen to be the judge. You can really crucify that fellow. But here is when you need to practice maximum restraint. Not allowing any of your past things to come. Just have to be objective enough to see whether he really did the crime or not. You may have a personal vengeance. I mean personal thing, he must have done a lot of injustice to you. But you don't bring it there. So when you do karma yoga on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when you are fighting, don't bring in your past. Just deliver the action objectively. Now a lot of us, when we got legitimacy, we go all out.
This fight is also on the past.
No. The fight has been declared now. Now in the present they are fighting. Physical action of fighting.
But it's
not the question of over what. When I am fighting, I should not bring in my past. I just have to do, in other words, whatever action I do, I may have personal problems between you and me. But in the present, I should not justify my action. In other words, what I am trying to say is, you have been in the name of vow, probably frustrating yourself. Now they told you, today you should eat, you should not fast. You go all out and indulge. A lot of people who are frustrating themselves in the name of vow, in the name of penance, not been doing penance in the truthful awareness, they only get into indulgence. So you are not somebody who have been waiting for an opportunity to get back when you are protected by law. Even though there is a sanction to fight, and in the fight you may kill them, you have to practice extreme restraint and objectivity. A lot of us, when we get an opportunity, what happens? The so-called good people, when there is nobody watching you, There are no cameras on the road, no policemen. Do you follow the speed limits? Do you follow the signal? So in other words, a lot of us behave properly when there is policeman. So what does it talk about? It talks about, what does it talk about? We do not want to be good. We think we should be good, therefore we are good. If I am not good, then karma will fall on me, therefore I better be good. So there is some kind of a force. So that is also sleepwalking. When I want to be good, whether there is a policeman, whether there is a camera, whether there is anybody, I still continue to follow the rules. This is awakened walking. Do you see the difference? A lot of us are good. Are we good because we want to be good? Oh, what will society think? What will they think? Or what will karma do? You know, this karma thing has been told to human beings. And if you've been brought up with this karma theory from childhood days, deep inside this karma is there. Oh, if I do something, karma will hit me, karma will hit me. I don't want to face bad karma, so I might as well be good. So in other words, if somebody says, okay, 3 days ke liye, the law of karma is taken off. Chutti. Those 3 days, how do you behave? A conscious person is not acting in any force, out of any force. So buddhi yoga is acting with your intellect without any compulsion. There is no external compulsion. There is total freedom with which you act. Then it's buddhi yoga. If there is any compulsion, then that is not buddhi yoga.
No, this is a little confusing. In this, okay, like cafe can always understand, but when you're in a fight with somebody, you reach the stage of a fight. You're fighting because of what injustice you feel has happened to you in the past. Or even like just now also, it's happened, that's why you're in the fight.
What I'm trying to say is, there was a lot of injustice done to you. Because of that, there is a war now. To restore righteousness. Lot of people, when they have been given the opportunity now to hit back legally, they will do a lot of atrocities. This is what they do in war crime. See, to defend yourself, when somebody attacks your country, to defend, your army fights back. But when your army fights back, there are certain rules that they have to follow. This is what happens in a war situation. A lot of people go. What is happening now? A lot of people are saying that Sri Lanka may.
Like the rapes and
all. Yeah, like the rapes and so many things. Ill-treating your opposite soldiers. Right? Ill-treating them. Making them strip and then shooting them. All sorts of things they do, right? So, in other words, you may be on the righteous side of fighting against unrighteous. But there also you need to treat with dignity. What is happening there is, you are behaving like with vengefulness. Do you know what I mean? Lot of us are like that. We just want legitimacy. Believe me, we just want legitimacy.
He said body should engage in action while the mind is at rest.
Yes.
So with a blank mind, you kind of don't.
Yeah. Think. So in other words, this example is the best example. War crime. You are fighting for righteousness, no doubt. But there you go in a very unrighteous way. Injustice, you do. You should not do that. Let them, they are facing, you are being an instrument in the hands of totality and you are doing the action. But you be graceful. But a lot of us get compelled. Again, mind comes. I've got sanction for my mind now. I am right, you are wrong, so I can finish. Never do that. You understand?
Becoming, then you, if you're trying to become something or trying to be something, then you do that. If you are, then you not.
Exactly. So that is why I said, in karma yoga, there is no compulsion, there is no force driving you, because you are aware. You are acting in a state of awareness. You will not even for a second be taken away from your awareness by any of your desires inside or the objects outside.
Okay.
are one and the same.
With awareness.
The gross aspect of Buddhi Yoga is Karma Yoga. The subtle aspect of Buddhi Yoga is Dhyana, meditation. So, he says, in this there is no contrary result. Because when a person functions with focus, the result comes automatically. Because result is nothing but the effect of an action. So when you do the action correctly, the result also comes. So you enjoy the world and you are functioning without any lack of awareness, with full awareness. Therefore you don't create more vasanas. So spiritually also there is no contrary result. Materially also there is no contrary result. In this the mind is resolute and one pointed. It functions meticulously, achieves both material and spiritual benefits. Materially, the fact that he is acting, he gets the result. And spiritually, the fact that he is acting with awareness, he doesn't create vasanas. So he is liberating himself also. This is what you are supposed to do in Grihastha Ashrama. But a lot of us are keeping our eyes closed and doing our actions in Grihastha Ashrama. Therefore, the Grihastha Ashrama, which should be helpful in releasing us from this thraldom of life, we are getting more and more entangled. In that context only I said, lot of things we do with desire, greed, guilt. So you are not doing it with awareness, actions. You create more and more bondage to yourself. So in Karma Yoga, we are in Grihastha Ashrama, but we are functioning in karma. Functioning, executing karmas, not Karma Yoga. So then he said, don't get trapped by the Vedas. It's not that he is criticizing Vedas. What he is saying is, Vedas are the beginning portion. Vedanta is the end portion of Vedas. So when he says Vedas, he is talking about the beginning portion, Veda Purvam. What are they? Mantras and rituals. What are they given for? You have a desire. The basis of Vedanta and Veda is this. Everything is energy. Energy attracts energy. Positive energy attracts positive energy. Negative energy attracts negative energy. You have a desire. But if you have a desire and you vibrate opposite to that desire, you will never fulfill that desire. Are you with me? You have a desire. But you are doing everything that will not bring the desire. So rituals and mantras, the mantras are sound vibrations. Doing certain rituals with such mantras will make you vibrate with that energy which will bring the desired results, which will push you to act in that direction so that the desired results will come. So there are a lot of Vedic mantras. If you want prosperity, do this mantra and these rituals. If you want a sattvic boy as a child, do this mantra, do these rituals, etc. So in other words, Vedas are nothing but desire fulfilling. To fulfill your desires. Are you with me? So you must fulfill your desires, but you must rise above them, not get stuck there. Lot of people are very happy if they live their life according to Vedas. They are going on fulfilling desires righteously, but they will never go towards liberation. So he says, don't get stuck by Vedas. Vedas should be a stepping stone. You can't suppress the desire, nor can you get stuck by the desire. You got to fulfill the desire and move on in life. You have a desire to play with toys when you were a small child. Play with toys and move on. As a grihastha, you want to play with passionate objects. The opposite sex. Play with it, move on. You understand?
What is Veda?
Move on to the Vedanta. I am coming to that point.
Move on to the
Vedanta. Vedanta is what? Finding out who you are. The very purpose of this life is to find out who am I. But we are stuck with desires. Desire fulfilling through Vedic rituals and mantras. So he says, Vedas can give you happiness. Vedanta will give you that happiness also, but it will give you infinite happiness. Cross beyond that and go. So he says, do your actions as a karma yoga. Karmani eva adhikaraha mafaleshu kadachana. Let your focus not be in the result, let it be only in the action. Result will come. Every action will have its own opposite reaction. So results will come. But while acting, let not your focus be on the action. And also, at any given point in time, you are right only with reference to action. You are doing one action, so many others are doing actions, the sum total will be the result. Are you with me? So therefore, you do your duty as a karma yoga. Never be bound to the result. Nor give yourself into inaction. Karmani eva adhikaraha ma faleshu kadachana ma karma falahetur boho ma te sangostva karmani. Let not your attachment be to inaction, nor to the fruit. You just focus on the present action in hand and move on. Thus, you will be fulfilling your desires and you will be rising above your desires. Then he said, samatvam yoga muchyate yoga karmasu kaushalam. So when your body is engaged in action, your mind should be at rest. And your actions will become skillful. In our case, our body is resting, mind is fully active. Too much of thinking about the world. So he says, samatvam yoga muchyate. Samatvam means what? For every thing in life, there is pairs of opposites, no? Pairs of opposites. Instead of going for choosing success all the time, between success and failure, everybody chooses success, no? Mentally, I want to be successful. Here Krishna is saying, don't give in to success or failure. Let your focus be in action. Then you will be balanced. See, a lot of people did business and made a lot of money and became running their business profitably and successfully. But again, they probably met with loss. Still they continued and again brought their empire back to success. Why was it? Why was it? See, a lot of us, we take the side of success. We are always taking sides. We take the side of success. We don't want failure. So we have chosen success and we are running after success, success, success. Instead of that, Krishna says, follow samatvam. Samatvam cannot be choosing success. Samatvam means focusing on action. So these, all these people who became successful, they did not stop their actions because they became successful. They don't stop their actions because they have lost something. They continue doing their actions. So they did not do actions for success or failure. They did actions for the sake of action. So what is going to give balance in life? When you do anything for the sake of doing it, you will be balanced. But when you do certain things for success, then you lose your balance. Remember this. So samatvam yoga. Samatvam yoga means when your focus is in action, that is yoga. When your focus has shifted to the result, the future, success, then you've lost your balance. When you see a person who is walking on the rope, he doesn't allow his focus to go on the crowds that are clapping around. Isn't it? He is very much focused. He may tilt towards one side, that is only to balance himself, not that he is taking on that side. Are you with me? He never allows his focus to go into anything else. He is extremely focused on what he is doing. Therefore he maintains his balance. So to maintain balance, your focus should be on action, not on success or failure. The fellow who is attached to success is constantly affected by the thought of failing. I should not fail, I should not fail. As you think, so you become. The fact that you are worried about failure, 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 you become a failure. But people, in material life, whether they fail or succeed, they focus on their action, they are balanced. And a person who is doing karma yoga, he says, is skillful. Skillful means what? A thief also steals. Skillfully, no traces of who has stolen. Can you say he is practicing karma yoga? Karma yoga, he calls a skillful action, because by acting in that focused manner, not thinking about the result, he is also destroying his karma. Na? He is also destroying his vasanas. So he is getting material benefit, and in one go he is also killing his vasanas. Thus he is evolving spiritually also. That is karma yoga. So karma yoga has two facets to it. One is skillful action with a physical body. And mind is calm and composed. Then you are practicing karma yoga. And buddhi is totally aware. And then he said, when your intellect has crossed the mire of delusion and get established in Atma. So in other words, you have understood the futility of the worldly happiness.
Karma yoga
is functioning with your body skillfully, dynamically, and your mind is calm and composed, and your intellect is aware, identified with the higher self, higher goal. That is karma yoga. So then in the concluding portion of this, he says, wise, united to knowledge, renouncing the fruit of action, liberated from the bond of birth, indeed reach the state beyond evil. Thus, the wise person who is only united to the self, he reaches me. He has crossed beyond the world, meaning his intellect has measured, weighed the happiness that the finite can give. He is no more interested in the finite happiness, he is only interested in the infinite. Intellect is not used for finite happiness. In our case, what are we doing? I want this. So I use my intellect. How can I get that? Oh, if I do this, if I do that, I'll get that. If I lock my competitor inside the room and I run, I will get it. So this is what we are doing. Using the intellect, which could help us in getting to the Atma for getting worldly benefits. Thereafter, this guy is not bothered. He is not going beyond Vedas. He goes to Vedanta. So, Shruti vi pratipannate. Shruti, the Vedas, are talking about fulfilling desires. He goes beyond that to the last portion of Shruti, which is Vedanta, which is to know thyself. And thus, he crosses the delusion, and through meditation, he reaches Atma. Are you with me? Through meditation he reaches Atma and becomes self-realized. This when Lord Krishna said, Arjuna wanted to know the nature of a sthita prajna. Who is a man of perfection? What is the profile of a perfect human being? So Arjuna asks four questions. Sthita prajnasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava, sthiti kim prabhasheta, kim asita vrajeta kim. What is the definition of a man of perfection? How does he sit? How does he talk? How does he walk? How does he speak? How does he sit? How does he walk? This Lord Krishna explained. He said the nature of a siddha prajna is, in his mind there is no desire. Prajahati yada kaman. In other words, mind is absolutely free. In our case, mind is preoccupied. Physically we may be unemployed, unoccupied. But mentally we are all preoccupied with so many desires. In the case of a siddha prajna, physically he may be occupied, but mentally he is preoccupied. He is free from preoccupations. He doesn't have any preoccupations. From his manas the desires have gone. And he walks in this world. He faces dukkha, sukha, everything. Dukkha and sukha comes to him also, no? Something favorable happens, sukha. Something not so favorable happens, dukkha. In his life also there will be dukkha, sukha, everything. But he doesn't get perturbed by them. Why? Like I told you, he focuses on the Atma within, not on the external happenings that come and go. Then he functions like a tortoise in this world. Tortoise moves about with total, carefulness, no? Any danger it senses, it quickly draws all its limbs. Similarly, he walks with awareness. He doesn't exit through the senses. The sense objects enter through the senses. But he doesn't allow his mind to get dragged away. You remember I spoke about senses being both the exit and entry door. In our case, senses is more often exit. Our mind has gone through the senses outside into the world. In this case, the world enters, the stimuli enters, but he governs his senses. So he says, one who controls his senses is said to be the self-realized soul. Sense control is equal to self-realization, he says. And we talked about here in the context, self-control is not self-denial. It is contacting with awareness. I am not driving at all. Can you call me as a controlled driver? I hardly drive and I don't drive. I should drive and be controlled. So being in the midst of the world, his mind doesn't get drawn away by the world. He is a Satapratya. Oh, before I come to the room, please make sure that there is no money, there is no opposite sex sitting in front of me. What kind of a self-controlled person are you? You understand? So, if you see Lord Ganesha's picture, there is a rat looking up to Ganesha. The rat, in front of the rat, there is a lot of sweet meat, modaka. Rat is waiting for the permission, only then it will contact. This is self-control. Contact with awareness. It's not how much you contact or how often you contact. Regulation can help in bringing about control, but regulation in itself is not control. A lot of people may have only one glass of alcohol every weekend. But if you deny that to them 1 week or 2 weeks, they'll get agitated. Regulation in itself is not control. Regulation can help you to lead to control, provided you substitute it with intake of higher knowledge. A lot of people, in the name of gaining control over senses, they are denying the senses and pushing the senses, forcing the senses. It only boomerangs. Anything forced is never forceful. So self-controlled person means sense-controlled person. And then in between, from 61 to 66, he talked about the importance of intellect, where he talked about the ladder of fall. From thought comes attachment, from attachment comes desire, from desire comes anger, from anger comes loss of memory, delusion, loss of memory, loss of intellect, etc. Thus a person falls. So therefore, what are you supposed to do? Act with awareness, nip it in the bud. Any thought, you got to be conscious and give it a direction. If not, it will slowly take you away. So he said, you must develop your intellect. Your senses should be under the control of your intellect. Then if your personality is not under the control of intellect, then you will not have happiness. If you do not have happiness, you cannot concentrate, focus, it will be a total loss. Then he said, that which is day for him is night for us. That which is night for that which is night for him is day for us. In other words, what did he say? There I told you, when a person is seemingly awake but is not awake, he is sleepwalking. So he says, in which everybody is sleeping, he is awake. Meaning in the world we are all asleep. That's why we are gathering more and more vasanas. But he functions with awareness. Even in sleep he is awake. I pointed out with examples. A mother is sleeping next to the child. If she turns this side, she will fall off the bed. If she turns this side, she will fall on the baby. But she continues to sleep in that position. That means what? There is something in her is awake even while she is sleeping, na? So exactly like that, in Siddha Prajna, even though the physical body is resting, he is totally awake. He never ever falls into dream. For a Siddha Prajna, there is no dream. Dream is nothing but unfulfilled desires of a waking state that requires a pressure release that comes as dream. He doesn't have any unfulfilled desire. When he is walking, he walks totally. He is in action, he is there fully. We cry in installments. Children don't cry in installments, they cry fully. Therefore, next minute they are able to smile. Because we cry in installments, we can't smile at all. Morning before going to work, a little bit we cry. Then after we come back from work, we cry a little bit. Siddha Prajna functions fully in the waking state. Therefore, when he sleeps also, he is awake. And he is asleep to the sense world. He doesn't know what is being controlled by senses. He doesn't know what is sleepwalking. And he is like an ocean, he says. All rivers enter ocean. Before the rivers enter the ocean, whatever state it was, it remains in the same state even after the rivers have entered. Similarly, before the senses entered, how he was calm and quiet, exactly the same way, even after the senses have entered, he is calm and composed. No difference it makes. Anybody praising, anybody criticizing, makes no difference. He is like ocean. Ocean is what? Paripurna. And it's complete. Independent. Similarly, he is also complete and independent. He is not dependent on the outside world. And this state is said to be state of Brahman. And when you get to the state of Brahman, you continue in that state even after death. Thus he concluded chapter 2. This is the Prajna Kosha.
One has to
start with senses. And to control our senses, we need to develop intellect. So that is why we say the life is to build your intellect, not just intelligence. Intelligence is gathering information and collecting more and more knowledge. You should start developing your awareness, your thinking. You should become more and more walkers, not sleepwalkers. So that's why we say you have to follow all the three: karma, bhakti, jnana, yoga. First thing in the morning when you have caught up, your mind is quiet. So it's more suitable for jnana yoga. You are not a person who can do full time jnana yoga. You need your world, right? So in the morning, first thing you sit and study. 20 minutes reading, 40 minutes thinking. Then you do yoga, pranayama, whatever. Walking, jogging and all that. Then after shower, little bit of prayer. Get on to your work. Do your action, whatever work you do, as a karma yogi. In the spirit of karma yoga. Then if you can, do a little bit of more study, thinking in the evening. Spend half an hour, 1 hour in the evening. Thus if you do all three yogas, all four yogas rather, karma, bhakti, jnana and hatha yoga. The yoga, pranayama and all that. When you do all that together, according to your capacity, over a period of time, you see your intellect developing and you're becoming more and more introverted. When you become more and more introverted, the proportion changes. Now you do more of jnana yoga because you're a little introverted now. You're not that extroverted. And then slowly, finally, you can go to meditation, and through meditation, you realize the self. Let us conclude. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.